Welcome to Baseball America's College Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk college baseball.
Hey, welcome to part two of our college baseball podcast for the day. It's May 30th. Big day in college baseball. It's always a big day on Memorial Day. For me, it's always about college baseball. It's drilled into my head for the last 20 years. And it was a big college baseball day, guys. Obviously, the Field of 64. But Jim Schoenert, Ted Cahill, Mike Lanana. We also had two major coaching changes. We'll touch on those at the beginning before we look ahead to the regionals. But Teddy, you were in SEC country last week. And I mean, at the tournament, you heard all kinds of rumors about SEC coaches that could go to Texas if Augie Garrido left. Augie Garrido steps aside. And a little bit surprising, I guess, that was released right during the TV show. That probably could have been handled more deftly by Texas. It does seem like a very Texas thing to do. I'll just start off by saying Augie Garrido, best career of any college baseball coach ever outside of Rod Dato. I mean, Dato has 10 championships, but Augie won championships, I think, in four different decades. Well, 79, 80s, 90s, 2000s. So four different decades. And went to Omaha recently, what, 2 years ago, 2014?
Yes.
CJ Inahosa and company. So still vital. Up until the end, although Texas's program certainly declined, no regional hosting since 2011. But it's an attractive job. It's going to get an elite name, you would imagine. The names that are thrown around at it with this job are guys like Kevin O'Sullivan at Florida. Every coaching opening that's at a big school gets Tim Corbin's name thrown around with it. Dan McDonald's name at Louisville gets thrown around with it. How attractive in your mind is this job? Because it seems like the job now is very different from it was when Augie got the job 20 years ago.
I mean, that's got to be job number one in college baseball, right? I mean, the only way it's not number one, I would think, is if you just don't want to deal with the Longhorn Network. And Augie had his cooking show on there, which I know, John, you love to watch.
I guess I should call it more of a restaurant show than a cooking show, but it was food-oriented, and I do like watching it. Augie's got good taste in brisket.
But in terms of, I mean, just... You're in Texas, so that's obviously a talent-rich baseball state. You are the biggest school in Texas. I believe that's actually, like, in terms of students. You are the flagship. Sorry, A&M fans. I know you're going to get mad about that. But, I mean, when you think about, I think when outsiders, I'm a Texas outsider. Texas looks to me like the flagship.
Yeah.
That is not a slight on A&M at all. They are just fine. It's a great job. I don't want the Aggies fans to get mad at me here.
They just don't have Texas's history.
Right.
But I mean, but A&M is a great job, yeah. And they certainly have changed the calculus in Texas and made Augie's job a lot harder.
Yeah.
And made the Texas job a lot harder than it used to be.
But, I mean, Texas is one of the most profitable athletic departments in the country, and therefore you will be paid as such. The fan support is great. The facilities are great. Everything about Texas screams big time job, and they will get a big time coach, like you said. I mean, you can just name whoever you think the five or six best coaches in America are and start with that as your short list. And obviously not all of them are attainable or anything, but
right.
I mean, you're Texas. I think it's fair to start like that. And we'll see where they go. I mean, the fact that they did it now means that they're probably going to be waiting for a little while, because when you big game hunt, you know, I mean, those guys are all busy for the
exactly.
most part. So the job will probably be open for a little bit. I would imagine that Texas has an idea of what it is doing. They've known for a while that Texas or the season would finish under 500.
Right.
A lot of people thought Augie went into this year on the hot seat, that he had only saved his job last year because they won the Big 12 tournament to get back to regionals. So Texas has had some time to think about this. And, you know, this kind of change does not happen, or at least it doesn't happen in a functional athletic department, if you haven't given some thought about who you want to replace him.
That's very well said. The other name I meant to throw in there, because I like to throw names around, is Pat Murphy. I do think that Pat Murphy would make sense at Texas. He had a great track record at Arizona State. It didn't end well. With the NCAA investigation, he had a show cause penalty. I always thought that was, I wouldn't say trumped up, but overinflated. And eventually, the way that was litigated, I think the facts wound up agreeing with me and with Pat Murphy over an athletic director who he didn't respect, basically because she was a woman, which is a problem, a significant problem, and in my mind, the number one problem for Murph. But the violations that happened at Arizona State were pretty insignificant, shouldn't have gotten him fired. I don't know if those kind of things stand in his way of getting a job at Texas. But the fact that he hasn't coached college baseball since 2009, to me, is a bigger obstacle. He has managed in the major leagues. But if you're looking for a coach who's available right now, he's the bench coach in Milwaukee. He's available, and he would hit the ground running, and he would shake things up. That's just my – I don't know if that's a realistic name at Texas. I would look into it because I think Pat Murphy's a hell of a college baseball coach. But the Alabama job, it sounds like, also attractive, Teddy. Difficult job because of the – basically the lottery situation in the Southeastern Conference. You would characterize Alabama from a scholarship point of view as a small revenue program because they don't have – they can't stretch their scholarship dollars like, say, Vanderbilt can with the academic scholarship money, or that a lot of the lottery schools, Florida, Georgia, can. But Alabama has – there is talent in that state. Obviously, a national brand name with the football program and the brand new and really one of the showplace ballparks and facilities in all of college baseball. It's an attractive job, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, it's an SEC job, so all 14 of those jobs are attractive. I don't know that I would put Alabama in the top half of the SEC, but really all that means is it's not a top 20 job nationally. It's still a very good job for all of the reasons you stated. I mean, that new ballpark, everyone says, is fantastic. And, you know, again, it's an SEC job. There are only 14 of those, and they're all pretty good. So Alabama should be able to do pretty well for itself here, you would think. Mitch resigned, and he wrote a letter that Alabama released to its fans. And, I mean, it really does – this does not seem like a situation where he was forced out at all. It seems like this was his decision to step aside, that, you know, for his reasons, he was just ready to not be the head coach at Alabama anymore after 7 years. I mean, it's a hard job. And
it is a hard job. Coaching college baseball, harder than it ever was before.
Yes. So, you know, Alabama has a few mid-majors within its own, you know, they can look within themselves, within the state, and find some good coaches there. Mark Calvi at South Alabama has done a good job and has SEC experience, you know, coming from South Carolina. Merville Melendez has completely turned around Alabama State. Has him in a regional for the first time ever this year, and he'd be a very interesting candidate. I would imagine there will be many others that get looked at there, but you know they don't have to look far if they don't want to. But again, they could because it's an SEC job, and there are, there are a lot of attractive things about that job in Tuscaloosa.
I've always thought that with the bold move for an SEC school down there, or that kind of school that's looking to win, would be Jeff Johnson at Chipola. He's got big league alumni. He's got a long track record of winning at Chipola. He knows that area. Not sure a Division I school, especially one in the SEC, is going to be bold enough to hire a junior college coach to be a Division I head coach. But it happened awfully successfully for Rice, which is a very high academic institution that hired a JUCO coach in Wayne Graham, won a national championship. They've won a lot of games, put their baseball program on the map. So there's precedent for it, but no one else has really followed the Wayne Graham precedent. So,
it used to be way more common. And now, Augie obviously started as a JC coach, although when he got to Fullerton, they were not Division I. But you know, now those days are very different than today's days.
Definitely. Oh, no doubt. And I mean, the fact that no one's done it since Augie, I mean, like, I always thought Scott Pickler from Cypress would have made sense at a Pac-12 school, or I'm blanking on the guy's name, who's a Coach Rogers at Riverside Community College in California. I always thought those guys would have been money Division I baseball coaches. Just never happened. But those two jobs, I think, are very, very interesting, very attractive. We've mentioned Kevin O'Sullivan. His job gets mentioned. His name gets mentioned whenever there's a big name job. Florida's a big name, but he's the guy who's really made Florida a big name in college baseball. It was a good program before, had its moments, but he's made them a consistent Omaha team. They went to Omaha last year. Preach is the number one. Louisville, our preseason number two. Dan McDonnell has made Louisville into a national power. Two trips to Omaha in the last 3 years. Three trips for him in his decade. Now this is his 10th year there. Jim, Mike, I put Teddy on the spot a lot, but I'm going to give Teddy and you guys a pat on the back that our preseason one and two were Florida and Louisville. And, Mike, that's where we wound up with those are the number one and two national seeds.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were believers in their talent from the get-go. It was pretty clear when you looked at what both teams were returning from last year and looked at what they had coming in, especially Florida with some big-name pitching recruits. It was pretty clear that both of those teams are the top two talented teams in the country. And I think, you know, there's kind of an argument throughout this year, especially the last few weeks of the season, which team do you like better? Which team do you think is the more talented team in the country? And I know, John, you and I have discussed Louisville might be that team. I know, you know, Teddy might be on a different side of that.
Yeah.
But
I'm starting to waver on that. That's where I was headed, actually, yeah. With my next question. I was all in on Louisville last week, and between those two teams, Florida had a much better week. 4-2 right. Week, I believe, in the Southeastern Conference. Louisville 1-2, Teddy.
Well, one thing about that is that Louisville has not won a conference tournament since 2009 when they were in the Big East.
Yeah, that's weird.
I think that tells you what Dan McDonnell thinks of conference tournaments. I don't want to speak for Dan.
He's like the Roy Williams of college baseball, is what you're saying. Old Roy didn't take the ACC tournament very seriously, I suppose, is one of the storylines. But, Mike, Louisville didn't look sharp this week. I mean, that's fair to say, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair to say. It was bizarre to see Drew Harrington, you know, the ACC pitcher of the year, somewhat surprising ACC pitcher of the year.
Very surprising.
It was even more surprising to see Virginia, you know, tag him for, it was a 7-run inning, 6 straight hits to start that inning. I'm not sure what was going on, but that was a little bizarre to see. And yeah, you know, they weren't, Brennan McKay wasn't quite as sharp against Clemson. Obviously, Clemson went on to win the ACC baseball championship, but
he held them to only a few hits, but there were 4 home runs.
Yeah,
you know, he allowed some. When he made mistakes,
some
Clemson made him
left
pay.
On left too. So yeah, it was a little. He just wasn't sharp. It didn't seem like he had a great feel for his breaking ball in that game. Was kind of, you know, trying to find the corners and missing. So yeah, I think it was just one of those weeks for Louisville. Obviously, you hope if you're a Louisville fan, if you're Dan McDonnell, you kind of get that out of your system a little bit.
Right.
Heading now, you know, into a regional. Host, they're a, you know, obviously the number two national seed, and I'm sure they're going to go in with a chip on their shoulder too after what happened last year against Cal State Fullerton in the Super Regional.
One would think so. Those are two interesting regionals, Jim, and we'll just touch on those. One thing for Florida, first, you have Georgia Tech as your 2, UConn 3, Bethune-Cookman the 4. Real interesting to see how you handle A.J. Puck, because you don't want to save Puck for game 2, because if that's Georgia Tech, they don't have any left-handed hitters. Why would you throw Puck, your lefty, instead of Fado or Shore, especially Fado with the slider that he's got, would be a very difficult matchup for Georgia Tech. Whereas UConn, you assume UConn will try to hold Anthony Kay for the second game, number one, because his arm is probably dangling because he was used very heavily in the American Athletic Conference tournament. Mm-hmm. Georgia Tech is pretty much a two-pitcher pony with closer Matt Gorst and starter Brandon Gold. That feels like a very winnable regional, one that where the Gators shouldn't be terribly taxed, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that of all of them, I mean, Florida was going to be certainly a heavy favorite no matter who was there, but that feels like, I mean, it'd be interesting, you know, if either Georgia Tech or UConn decide to hold back either Anthony Kay or, Gold, if either of them decides to hold those guys back, I think that's really the only way, either chance either of those teams has to, do some damage, you know, to at least give the Gators a run.
I think that you have to hold. If they're those, you get to hold the ace back, especially UConn, the way they used them. And then you're either going to get Shore or Fado in that second game. And I would imagine they would go Shore, even though he pitched very well Sunday, Teddy.
Well, Sully said, obviously things can change. Sully said on Friday, probably, whatever day it was, the days in Hoover run together. He said that Shore would either pitch Friday or Saturday.
It feels like in past years they've just stuck with their same rotation.
Well, I think they
used Shore in the opener, even against the 4 seed.
I think the difference this year is Georgia Tech being so right-handed, and the fact that Puck pitched ahead of Shore in the tournament last week. I think he would leave it Puck, Shore, Fado, which means that Puck would get his last start before the draft against Bethune-Cookman, which is really not what you expect. But I think that's what's going to happen. I think you're going to see Puck in that Friday game. Good luck with that, Bethune-Cookman. And then Shore for the second game, which is the most important game of the tournament, really. But I think also because the right-hander is a better matchup against Georgia Tech is a big reason for that. But that regional is, to me, a much easier draw than Louisville got. I think Louisville, at the two national seed, got a very tough draw. I don't know if Keegan Agan has anything in the tank. He pitched twice in the MAC tournament. Kudos to Kent State, which lost the game. I'm not ragging on Western Michigan, but Eric Lauer is going to be a first-round pick, and they didn't use him on short rest. Western Michigan has Keegan Agan, who could be a second-round pick. They used him on short rest. Western Michigan advances. Kent State doesn't. Kent State wins 44 games, stays home. But I want to make sure we point out that Kent State deserves kudos for protecting the pitcher's arm.
There's a reason why Mike Birkbeck was our assistant coach of the year in 2011.
Yeah.
Or 12, whichever year that was. Yeah. They know what they're doing up at Kent State.
There's so much negative attention on some of these teams. Here's some positive attention that I think Kent State deserves. That said, healthy Keegan Agan, if he's fresh enough or if he can pitch that game, tough matchup for anybody, not to mention Louisville. Then Ohio State and Wright State. Wright State's one of the better three seeds on this, guys. And Ohio State is red hot and physical. I mean, Jimmer, for me, Louisville's regional is much tougher than Florida's.
Yeah, there are a couple of national seeds that kind of got regionals that are tougher than maybe you would thought. But yeah, that's one. I mean, obviously, as we talked about, Ohio State's been red hot down the stretch. They win the Big Ten tournament coming out of the loser's bracket. They played well down the stretch. Ronnie Dawson's been on fire for them. And, you know, Wright State, obviously getting Sean Murphy back. I mean, he's, you know, a big part of that. He's, you know, a difference maker back there. They're out without him for a lot of the year. And, I mean, that's a good team. Jesse Schulten's, you know, good, you know, Friday night ace who's thrown a perfect game.
Legit number one pitcher.
I'll see if they save him, obviously. But that's a really tough regional.
I don't think they can afford to save him because Ohio State has, you know, is what they are. And, you know, it could be a really good pitching matchup there with Tanner Tully going for Ohio State against Jesse Schulten's. Personally, I mean, you knew this was going to happen, that Louisville was going to get Ohio State and Wright State, and just because of the way the committee works and regionals work. But I was hoping that it wouldn't happen. But it is fun that Wright State and Ohio State do not play in the regular season.
Oh, is that just Ohio State does not deign to play the smaller schools?
There's some stuff there. but Ohio State would play them.
You're our resident Ohio expert.
They didn't play this year, so it's good that you know, we'll get it, even if it's unfortunately. You know, I would have liked, as always, to see a little more diversity in regional and super regional pairings, but one benefit is that we get this game, which didn't happen during the regular season.
Yes, I like that. I like that matchup. I think that's a very tough regional. The ones that, you know, Florida's matched up with Florida State. The Tallahassee regional also seems tough, Mike. I think we talked about that in the first podcast.
Yeah.
And the Vanderbilt regional that is matched up with Louisville seems tough. Vandy, UC Santa Barbara probably shouldn't have been a two, but RPI, clearly they had a two seed RPI. UW is a three. We'll see if Troy Rawlings is healthy. Signs point to no. And Troy Rawlings, to me, kind of is Washington's baseball this year. That's how Washington was the number two team in the Pac-12. Lots of bunts and Troy Rawlings in their bullpen. And then Xavier, the Big East regular season and tournament champion, is a four. Really, again, it just seems like Vanderbilt got a little bit of a tough field, but Florida State's Tallahassee, much tougher in my mind.
Yeah, I would say Florida State has a tough draw here. I mean, Southern Miss just dethroned Rice. You know, Rice had won.
Could have had a case to host.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, they've been up there all year in terms of RPI. And, you know, South Alabama was, you know, tied with Louisiana Lafayette in the Sun Belt and, you know, had a great year in their own right. You know, two teams that, you know, very tough. And, you know, Southern Miss at one point, yeah, we were talking about them as a potential host in this tournament until things, you know, they got swept by Florida International, you know, the final weekend and,
right,
you know, just kind of struggled a little bit down the stretch. So that cost them, you know, potential hosting. But, you know, you look at that regional and, yeah, I think it's one of the tougher ones in this field this year. I think it's a much harder draw than what Vanderbilt got.
Well, I think it should be that way. I mean, Florida State should be one of the last hosts, you would think. So you would hope that teams further down would get the harder regionals.
You know, Florida State, let's talk about them for a minute. Mike, we saw them up close all week. Mm-hmm. We debated them in the last rankings of the year, the last regular season rankings. Mm-hmm. What is the real Florida State team? I mean, this team, the team that got was getting just destroyed, almost brought me to the point of using an expletive on this podcast, losing 18-1 to Clemson and just like TFCO. They didn't even want to show up for that game, or the team that scored the next 12 runs of that game and really did compete and found an answer on the mound in Will Zierzow, great name, Zierzow. Which is the real Florida State? I mean, you were, I think, I feel like you're higher on them now than you were a month or two ago when you first saw them, and that's after watching them get pummeled for 18 runs in a game.
Yeah, I'm a little higher on them now. It's, you know, it's still somewhat lukewarm, but I'm definitely a little higher on them now, having watched them throughout this tournament and seeing them go 3-0 in pool play. And, you know, obviously seeing them fight back down 17 runs in that game, I thought it was impressive. Certainly, but you know the big question with them is the pitching. You know, I think that's really the biggest question, whether they're going to have enough. You know, especially from a starting pitching standpoint.
If I were them, I'd go all in on the freshman with Sands and Holton.
Yeah, those Holton. Holton impressed me. That was one of the reasons why I like them a little better, because I see now that they have a, you know, a third option there.
And he was good on Saturday. He was really good on Saturday. And he dropped the bomb at the plate Sunday.
Yeah, he homered. Yeah, so he's a two-way threat. But yeah, he's a solid lefty, a freshman lefty. You know, he doesn't blow it by you, but he's got good feel for a breaking ball. And
I saw four pitches. Our reports on him in a high school are four pitches for strikes. You know, his velocity wasn't in that game wasn't what, you know, he had in short bursts on the showcase circuit. But
yeah.
I was impressed with Tyler Holton on Saturday as well against the U.
Yeah, so. And then offensively, you know, I really do like them offensively. And the thing that stands out to me is that they have four switch hitters
right
in their lineup, which, I mean, Taylor Walls, you start with him, leadoff hitter, shortstop. And then, I mean, three of them are in the top of the order, and Cal Raleigh and Jackson Luke. I think since they put Jackson Luke
in the
three hole, putting him in the lineup, you know, he's hitting over 400.
That's a team that for next year will be very interesting to see what Sands does as a sophomore, Holton,
right,
and then Luke and Raleigh. We're talking about all those are four freshmen. Those are pretty impact freshmen.
Right.
Taylor Walls is a sophomore. Dylan Busby, who had four home runs.
Right, I haven't even talked about Busby yet. Yeah,
he was feeling that Thad Busby vibe this weekend, which I don't even know what a Thad Busby vibe is. He's a former Florida State quarterback and. But he had four home runs in the week. All those guys are coming back for them next year. Like, their big losses, like John Sansone and the two pitchers who are the reason that you look at Compton and who's the other pitcher who's been there forever? The fifth-year guy? Doggone it. There's one other. Carlton. Those are the guys that you just don't think.
Drew Carlton's back. It's, I mean, they've got Warmoth and.
Warmoth's a senior. Right.
They have two grad transfers in Warmoth and.
Warmoth was a little ugly this week.
Yeah. I mean, really, it's they're losing Neoporte, they're losing Sansone, they're losing Compton, but none of these are you know, they've been significant players for Florida State, but they're also more complementary. They are not the stars of this team. I mean, Sansone has been exceptional this year, but he's not.
He's not a star. He's a good college player.
He's a guy that came on as a senior. And,
right. I feel like the rest of that team, the bulk of that team coming back next year will be very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Teddy, I wanted to ask you, Vanderbilt, another very young team. Am I wrong, or is Vanderbilt's offense outside of Brian Reynolds pretty pedestrian right now? Because Jaron Kendall was off to a great start this year. Feels like he's backed up a bit. I don't know what kind of week he had in. This just feels like, away from home, a very ordinary offensive team.
I know, Vanderbilt had an interesting week in Hoover. They went 2-2. You know, they start out against Missouri. They win that 7-0.
And that was off Tanner Houck, right?
That was off Tanner Houck, though Tanner Houck was on short rest. I mean, it wasn't really short rest, but it was shorter rest. They did beat Tanner Houck 7-0. And then they end up going 2-2. And they get run ruled. I think that was the first time they'd ever been run ruled in a tournament or in the SEC tournament. But they also did score a bunch of runs in a couple of those games. In the loss to Ole Miss, they got down big early and came back and actually made it a game. And I think annoyed people by how long the game took because they kept scoring runs after it looked like it was over.
Yeah, they wound up losing 12-9
when
it was like 12-3 earlier.
Yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah. So. It's an offense that can do stuff. There is a bit of a boom or bust nature to it. But you know,
like a better version of North Carolina, it sounds like.
it's way more athletic than North Carolina's lineup because you got Reynolds, you got Kendall, you got Alonzo Jones who can fly.
Liam Sabino.
Liam Sabino comes off the bench, pinch hit a couple times down there. They're still kind of finding their way though. Roe Coleman had been their left fielder most of the year, but they're not satisfied there with his defense or his offensive production particularly. So they were kind of looking for some answers down there, and maybe they found one in Walker Grisanti, another freshman. I mean, it's just a really young lineup, and sometimes young lineups hit, and sometimes young lineups don't hit.
They obviously miss Dansby Swanson. The other thing they really miss is just Will Toffey from last year just hasn't shown up.
Played really well in Hoover. But yeah, the overall body of work this year for Will Toffey has not been what it was as a freshman.
So 397 on base, 272 slugging percentage. That is not what I would have expected. Next couple sets of super regionals. We're going to talk a lot about the Raleigh regional, I'm sure, because it's in our backyard. But NC State, we talked about this earlier, they got a tough regional with Coastal Carolina, St. Mary's, Navy. Guys, LSU, Baton Rouge regional on the other side. Rice, Southeastern Louisiana, Utah Valley. It feels like there's LSU and then seven other teams in that bracket. I don't mean to slight NC State in that way. I'm glad they got to host a regional. But they're banged up on the mound. I feel like Coastal Carolina, St. Mary's, Navy, all those kind of teams are interesting, but LSU's playing really well. I know they ended up faltering a bit in the SEC tournament after their big win against Florida, but am I alone in thinking that LSU, the number eight national seed, that this is, I don't know about a cakewalk, but this sets up very nicely for LSU, Jimmer, in my mind.
It does. I mean, they'll certainly be a heavy favorite. I'm going to see if, I mean, Rice, we know Rice has arms, so you never know what might happen there if, you know, John Duplantier or Blake Fox, whichever one they end up facing, has a good night, or Southeastern Louisiana is a good team that can't, I mean, those wouldn't be, it's not a cakewalk regional, but they're certainly the favorite. And yeah, I mean, the one in Raleigh, that's a lot, that could go a lot of different directions. I think, I mean, NC State was not very good down the stretch. As you said, their pitching is pretty banged up, so that's a pretty wide open regional there. And yeah, LSU is on fire. Obviously, they just won. You know, they won a series at home against Florida to end the year. They played well in Hoover. I mean, they're definitely a strong favorite to come out of that. Out of that group of eight.
You were there in Hoover, Teddy. What was your impression of the Bayou Bengals? Can they win without the Rally Possum magic? I mean, I'm a little tired of that myself.
I mean, I don't think you've seen the last of that marsupial.
Oh, I'm
sure. I know they lost to Florida, but you'll see that again. You'll be seeing that the rest of the year. Especially since, maybe we'll see other teams show up with an owl like Florida did. Because that's a possum's natural
enemy?
Natural predator, yeah.
Sure. I always think the natural predator of the possum is the car. possum or roadkill is the way I think about it.
But yeah, LSU had a really good week down there. They're another team that has a young lineup. They're a little older than Vanderbilt. We've talked about how LSU lost eight starters from last year and how they're going to replace them and, right. And what was it going to look like? Well, what it looks like right now is an offense that is clicking on all cylinders. They got shut out in their last game by Florida. Sometimes that happens, but they've really been a consistent offense during this hot stretch where they've won, I think it's 14 of 16 now. And the lineup is a huge part of that. They pitch well. You have Alex Lane. That's a great start to a pitching staff, but
he looked great after giving up those first two runs against Florida. He was locked down the rest of the game. He was toe to toe with AJ Puck.
Absolutely. And, they've got Poche. Caleb Gilbert pitched really well in the game they did lose to Florida. He only gave up the one run. It was a 1-0 win for Florida. So it was a very well-pitched game all around. So they pitch, and their hitting is now, they've got it where they want it. And they have they just do a very good job of staying with their approach. It's a team that doesn't strike out a lot. They put the ball in play. They make the defense work for it. And, they've got some speed. They've got some athleticism. And, they should be able to do some things. I mean, like we've mentioned, the other teams here in this regional, Rice struggled down the stretch. Southeastern struggled down the stretch. I mean, this sets up very well for LSU.
I think so. And the Raleigh regional is gonna have very interesting pitching. Would anyone here be surprised if Coastal won that regional?
Not one bit.
No.
Would anybody be surprised if NC State won that regional? I wouldn't be surprised. And the host.
Yeah.
I would be shocked though if anybody else won the Baton Rouge regional, right? I mean, like anyone other than LSU won that. That would blow me away.
I mean, Rice is, like Jim mentioned, they have good pitching, but it is limited. They have three really good starters. They have a dynamite closer in Glenn Otto. And after that, they're short.
Yeah, I mean, they are. South Carolina, speaking of short, Chad Holbrook leads the Gamecocks into a host regional. I kid because I love Chad Holbrook. But that's a tough regional, guys. That's a tough setup for an SEC team. You get an ACC team as your three.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmer, explain to me Duke as a three versus Wake Forest a two. Why? How'd that happen? Was it one game in Durham that important? Why is Wake a three, a two? And oh, no, they're both threes. I confused myself. Both those teams are threes. Why are those teams threes and Georgia Tech's a two? Because they swept Coastal Carolina?
Well, that certainly cost Coastal Carolina hosting a regional.
Seems like it.
I mean, the committee chairman on the call just now, an hour ago, whatever it was. I mean, he basically said straight out. I mean, not verbatim, but that that Coastal's getting swept by Georgia Tech cost them hosting a regional. I mean,
so it was
he
that
said some little dry. He said another little spiel about other stuff, but that was pretty much it. These two. What was the question?
Well, the question was why is Georgia Tech three?
It's been a long week, Jimmer.
That's okay. Jimmer covered the hell out of the Southern Conference tournament, and these two pods as well with Western Carolina and Clemson.
Exactly.
So that's why I wanted to go to you on this one. I mean, what's up with the Catamounts? And do they've always been a very offensive mm-hmm. team. Bob Miranda, their head coach, was a pitching coach, has a very pitching coach centric, mm-hmm. Reputation. For me, that's a tough regional as well with Clemson, Western, Nebraska, Oklahoma State. Nebraska was kind of bubble in, but what was the story of the SoCon tournament as Western Carolina overcame Kyle Lewis and Mercer twice on Sunday?
Yeah, I do think Mercer was probably the best team there, but I mean Coastal, Western, they bore down. And I'm trying to think of a politer way to say it, but they toughened up and got.
That's it.
There you go.
They showed
Bobby
some
Miranda had a more descriptive way to what he described it last night, but yeah, I mean they had to overcome. They took a kind of a gut punch loss in the winner's bracket game Saturday afternoon. Bounced back, got some big efforts on the mound from guys on short rest. Brian Sammons, their number one, who got knocked around by Wofford in their first game. He came back on 3 days rest through, I think it was seven innings. And then they brought their closer, BJ Noble, start the winner take all game. He goes 8 2/3. And yeah, then they just found a way to pull out some tight games. And obviously they're winning on the walk off HBP. Not the Hollywood ending, but they'll take it. And yeah, I mean, they've got a dangerous offense. I mean, Matt Smith was their first baseman was red hot. Kramer Farrell, a senior left fielder, was red hot. I mean, Danny Bermudez, a veteran catcher, has been around. He's a dangerous hitter, and they've got some speed.
Danny Bermudez. Is he a transfer from somewhere? His name sounds familiar.
I don't know. I think he's been there a little. Anyway, but yeah, I mean, we'll see how the pitching holds up. Obviously, it was pretty taxed, but they can score, and that's gonna. They're not going to be a pushover for. No matter who they're matched up with,
because Clemson doesn't pitch great, Mike. There's no other way around it. They won the ACC tournament by pitching well, and then they just slugged their way past Florida State, where basically Alec Bostic, who they had very high hopes for coming into the season, threw exceptionally well Sunday, 4 innings, 8 strikeouts. He's a straight reliever, but the fact that he went 4 innings, even though he's out of the stretch against Florida State lineup. Maybe they pitch him, but I mean, like, what's Clemson's pitching plans outside of do what we can to get the ball to Pat Kroll?
I think that's exactly it. I think it's get the ball to Pat Kroll. I think it's use Pat Kroll as much as you possibly can. and which is what they did in this tournament, and that's that's a big reason, you know, why they won, or at least, you know, part of the reason, that and Mike Triller.
I was wondering when his name was going to come
surprisingly,
up.
Surprisingly, but
I should be just playing the bass line in the background. His name just puts that in my head at all times.
Yeah, no, it does for me too. If you follow me on Twitter this week, you would have seen it. But
Mike had to step up his GIF game because the Vine game was prohibited.
I did. But yeah, I mean, you look at Clemson's pitching staff, and it's not super deep. They're going to have to really battle on the mound. You know, Charlie Barnes is a decent college lefty. You know, a guy who's going to turn in a solid start. You know, there's some times he's going to be knocked around a little bit too. He doesn't have blow it by you stuff. You know, I was, you know, seeing Clate Schmidt. I hadn't seen him since back in March when they played South Carolina, and noticeably his stuff was firmer. The velocity was a little higher, up a few ticks, and you know he's worked on his mechanics. He's become a little more rotational in his delivery, and he's gotten a few ticks on his fastball up to 91, 92 when it was in the mid to high 80s early on this year. And he was holding that velocity late into the game. So I think that's a significant development because, you know, he's a guy, obviously a senior with a ton of experience and a ton of moxie, just everything that he's had to battle through, you know, and go through off the field and on the field. So he's a guy certainly who, you know, here in the postseason could be a guy to step up in a big moment for them. But, you know, they're not going to win with their pitching necessarily. I think they're going to win just, you know, grinding through games. I think that's the thing that kind of impressed me most about this Clemson team is, you know, looking at them this week, you know, they overcame some deficits and, you know, some really close games. And, you know, Monty Lee talks about winning the last nine outs. And you look at the last nine outs, except for, you know, maybe this past game, but, but for the most part, they won those last nine outs.
That was awesome. You sent my bracket flying, Mike. That's outstanding. But yeah, they won the nine, to lose the last nine outs, 8-0 to Florida State, and win the game by 5 runs.
Yeah,
it's a big lead.
It's an imposing offense, though, when everyone's swinging the way they've been swinging. And obviously, Monty Lee has done a great job of just kind of pushing the right buttons. And I think Mike Triller is the biggest example, a guy who came into the week with only 26 at-bats this year, only 4 hits, and he ends up winning MVP of the whole tournament, hitting 2 home runs. And
that's crazy.
Yeah,
That was a crazy MVP. Dylan Busby was the best player at the ACC tournament, but you know, the winning team gets, I understand that.
Yeah.
Does UNC by the sea, Wilmington or Duke, or Rhode Island with their left-hander Taylor, who's like 12-1. Teddy, any of those teams have a shot at upsetting South Carolina? The Gamecocks went 2-Q down in Hoover.
As always.
That's their
MO.
Yeah.
It does seem like that's their MO. Does that worry you at all about the Gamecocks? They basically finished pretty meh down the stretch of the year.
Yeah, they are not. I mean, I think, I'm sure they'll disagree with this, but they may have peaked a little early this year. You know, we'll see if they can get it back now that the postseason's here. Chad Holbrook, in his final press conference after they lost their second game, talked about how they needed to find guys that could give them competitive at-bats, that he didn't feel like down there that guys were taking competitive at-bats, and that they were going to spend this week doing two-a-day practices, and that he intended to practice very hard, get them as sick of seeing him as possible so that on Friday when they go out and see another jersey, they're just so happy to see somebody else. You know, so Chad knows that he's got to get the team in a better spot than they were this week. And he'll probably be able to do that. I mean, it's a talented team. And I think this is not a super difficult draw. Wilmington struggled down the stretch a little bit.
Right. Very offensive team, but reeling, I have to imagine, after blowing, what was it, a 7-run lead in the ninth inning to William & Mary?
7 or 8, something like that.
Twice, too, right?
It was ugly.
I know that was in the first game. Then they lost the If Necessary game.
Yeah, I guess they didn't blow a lead in the second game. They just got down big in the second game.
Probably the one true bid thief, other than Utah,
was William
& Mary, yeah.
And then Duke, first time since 1961 to get in.
I mean, they're going to pitch, but are they going to, I mean, They're a different team on the road as well.
They've been better on the road, frankly. They've been better.
They have been. And, you know, we'll see how they handle this environment. They've obviously gone to some tough environments before, but this is different. This is a regional, and there's no one on that team at all with regional experience. Not that South Carolina's brimming with experience since they missed last year, but this is going to be just a new thing for Duke, and so it'll be interesting to see how they handle that.
The storyline of Clemson, South Carolina, if those teams both win and build up to a super regional, that will be a bonkers media reaction. And Clemson, to me, is the team trending in the better direction there. But they would, they would host their national seed. They're the number 7 national seed.
Yeah. Yep.
That would be an amazing story for Monty Lee to get to Clemson and in his first year, take them to Omaha. That is, it's there. It's in there. It's in there. It's doable. I'm not saying they're the favorite. I guess I am saying they're the favorite to do that. They are the favorite out of these teams to get to Omaha in his very first year. It is beyond anything I thought was possible for Clemson this year. Extremely impressed by the Tigers. Next set of regionals and super regional pairings: Texas Tech hosting trying to get to Omaha for the second time in 3 years. Tim Tadlock. It's a guy we probably just don't talk about.
Speaking of JC coaches, I mean, he didn't go there directly, but he's got some JC.
That should help. That should help JC, the JC track record. That is a very offensive regional, guys. Dallas Baptist. Did I write that down right? Okay, that's a
Dallas
DBU.
Dallas Baptist, New Mexico.
New Mexico Fairfield. I have DBQ. I was like, wait a minute, what? Because that's like a dairy,
like a
blank
dairy
queen. You know, I mean, like That's the wrong abbreviation.
That's like a Dairy Queen / barbecue place.
That's right. DBQ. Great idea, Mike. Soft serve ice cream and brisket. Texas Tech, guys, 1-2 in the Big 12, but they dominated the Big 12 so long. It's almost, did they lose their edge a little bit? I mean, like the last 2 weeks of the year, it's almost like they didn't have anything to play for.
Yeah, I think they didn't care.
Time to get refocused.
Yeah, they also had a finals break that was probably unfortunately timed 2 weeks before the end of the season. So they do need to refocus and get going, but I'm pretty confident that Tadlock will be able to get that team going again. They are in a position that nobody expected they would be in at the start of the year. I know Jimmer, when he was doing preseason Big 12 stuff, coaches mentioned that Texas Tech was a sleeper there, but I don't think anybody thought they were a sleeper all the way up to the fifth national seed. They should be able to get things going. It is a bit of a tougher draw. DBU is they're rolling again.
Right.
Dan Huefner has that team going again, and New Mexico is very offensive, as you mentioned. Interesting storyline with Ray Birmingham and Tadlock being close friends from So it'll be interesting to see how that one turns out, but Texas Tech is the most talented team there, and I think they'll be able to find their edge again.
And that national seed will be matched up with the Virginia regional, which is a tough regional, guys. For me, Bryant as the 2 and as a top 25 team, we're all Bryant believers. East Carolina as a 3 has already played the Cavaliers and beat them 2 out of 3 this year. And William & Mary coming off a red-hot Colonial Athletic Association tournament. Mike, we saw Virginia all week. Pretty impressive victory for them offensively against we kind of thought they were in terms of the fact that they really are an offensive-minded club this year. Mm-hmm. They lost a game to Wake Forest with Connor Jones pitching. That's the biggest question, is which Connor Jones are going to show up, because his stuff was pretty
well. It was the Clemson,
mediocre.
It was the
Clemson that he lost. I'm sorry. He got knocked around there, too. They gave up 10 runs to Wake Forest.
Yeah.
Pitching-wise, I just don't feel like Virginia's peaking right now.
Yeah, they're not super deep as far as pitching goes. I do think they've figured out things in their starting rotation, although it wasn't a banner week for Connor Jones and for Alec Bettinger. It wasn't a banner week for them by any stretch, but Adam Haseley had a nice start going toe-to-toe with Drew Harrington.
He was just good enough. He had 5 walks in that game, but he was on the precipice. I do wonder what would have happened how different would that turn out if you have bases loaded 2 outs in the bottom of the 5th instead of facing Colby Fitch, who's a nice hitter, he's had a good year.
Yeah.
You're facing Brendan McKay. They gave McKay that day off because the game was a friendly.
Right.
He pitched hit later in the game, but you're facing Fitch instead of McKay. That makes a big difference for me.
Yeah, no, certainly. That could have made a difference in that game. But, yeah, Virginia, it wasn't a super impressive tournament. But, I mean, you look at the 2 losses. They were close games. They were in both games. You know, Clemson just kind of gutted it out at the end. I mean,
right.
Virginia had rallied back to tie. You know, Theis hit a home run to tie against Pat Kral, their top reliever, as we talked about earlier, to tie that game in the eighth inning. And it was just a sack fly in the ninth that won it for Clemson. And, you know, the Wake Forest game was 10-9. It was just a slugfest, which there were several of those this week. The ball was flying out of that ballpark this week.
A lot of conference tournaments turn into slugfests.
I love that the SoCon finals were 3-2 and 4-2.
How'd that happen?
And your guys were 18-13.
Yeah. How'd that happen? I mean, like,
that's a good question.
Where did those teams find the pitching? Because I'm serious, like, did they use guys who were little used during the season?
There were a few. There was some of that. I mean, the guys on Sunday. Yeah, Sunday. Mercer started its ace in the last game. Western started its ace in the first game. In the early game, Mercer did use a guy that I guess maybe made some midweeks, but he was kind of further down the depth chart. Josh Neese, I believe, was his name. So there were some games kind of in the middle where you saw teams using guys as throwing maybe like, you know, the 10 innings or whatever, that kind of stuff. But yeah, at the end, they were using their good arms. And in both cases, so we're not, for the record, so we're not throwing coaches under the bus here. We're talking about Eric Lauer. So Mercer started Ryan Askewitz ace on Sunday. He only threw 50 pitches in his first game before they took him out. So he was on 3 days rest, but they took him out early in their first game. And Brian Sammons, Western's ace, it was a case where he was so bad in his first start that he did not throw very much. So that's, they were able to bring him back. And then, so they were using their best guys at the end.
Well, maybe that explains it. Conference tournaments in general, guys, I mean, I don't know, for it, against it, Teddy, how do you stand on that? We have a 4 seed on the other side of the bracket in Utah that Pac-12 had no tournament, and Utah and UW basically had a de facto Pac-12 championship series over the weekend in Salt Lake. UW wins the first game, and Utah rallies back to win the last two with an offensive display against the Troy Rawlings-less Huskies. Which do you prefer? Would you prefer the regular season, or do you prefer the tournament?
I think if you're a power conference and you can make money on your tournament, as I believe both the SEC and ACC do, go have your tournament, make your money, cash your checks. If you are not in that situation, I am in the belief that the MAC is at a disservice this year because it put a team in regionals that is under 500 in Michigan State, while Kent State, Western Michigan, while Kent State sits at home with 44 wins. However, if you don't have a tournament, what that does is creates a lot of really tough practices in April and May for about half of your league that has already been eliminated.
Interesting point.
Yeah, that's a thing that some coaches have mentioned, that, you know, one of the things that they like about the tournament is that when you have 8 spots, 10 spots, however many teams you take, you know, it keeps more teams with something to play for, and that actually, like, not only do they have something to play for in the games, but it actually gives them a reason to show up at the field and to take practice seriously and stuff.
Right. JJ and I talked about this in a previous podcast. It was more of a draft-oriented podcast. But at some point, it almost feels like the NCAA is going to have to take it out of these coaches' hands and have pitch limits for their pitchers in tournaments. Because otherwise, you're going to see Anthony Kay used on short rest, Duplantier at Rice on short rest, Keegan Agan on short rest, which just is terrible PR for college baseball, plain and simple. And the coaches, in general, for every Kent State, there are 3 or 4 other examples. And you can't expect the coach for the majority of coaches to put the players' interest ahead of theirs. And they think they're doing the players' interest by trying to win the tournament, and they are, but for those few prospects, it's hard to argue that it's good for those guys to throw 100 pitches twice or 75 plus pitches twice in 4 days. If it's good for them, do it all the freaking time. And they clearly don't think it's good for them because they don't do it all the time. You know, otherwise you'd use your guy on Tuesday in a midweek and then on Saturday and then on Tuesday, you know, you would do it all the time. So at some point, I think the NCAA, because I think you're right, tournaments do have, that's a great reason from a coach's viewpoint of why you want a tournament. So if that's the case, at some point the NCAA is probably going to have to pull a little league and limit pitches, limit workloads.
I would like more tournaments to go to pool play. I know pool play gets a bad rap here in the ACC, which is maybe – are they the only pool play tournament? I think
they
are.
The only one, the only one left.
Yeah, because the Big 12 used to do it when they had 12 teams.
Yeah, they went back.
Yeah.
CUSA used to do it. They went back to double elimination.
And, I mean, I know why people don't like it, because they don't like ties and they don't like the tie-breaking situation, but I think it's just better when you know that you're going to go and you're going to play three games, which is what you do normally, and then you go and you play one more, and everybody has enough pitching to do that because you have to play four games a lot of weeks in college baseball.
How about this format? How about 12 teams, four three-team pools? You just play two. You're guaranteed two games, and then four teams advance, semifinals, finals. That's one proposal of the ACC. The other one is 12 teams, four three-team pools, and then you take the top two teams in every pool, and then you do 8-4-2. So quarterfinals, semifinals, finals. So that'd be a long tournament. But
that is probably too long.
I think that's too long. I don't like the quarterfinals. But if you did it the other way, it's like a hybrid where you do have pool play. Everyone's guaranteed two games, minimum, and then no one plays more than four. So I like that about the pool play. Real quick, we should motor through these. We've already discussed the Starkville regional on the previous podcast. Very difficult regional. Mississippi State hosting Cal State Fullerton, Louisiana Tech, and Southeast Missouri. How about the one with Louisiana Lafayette getting to host? I think it's the third time Lafayette's gotten to host all time, maybe the fourth time.
It is the third time.
Third time, 2000, 2014, and now. So the Raging Cajuns with Princeton as their one. Princeton's had some spirited inner squads, I'm guessing, because they clinched about 3 years ago. It was really more like 3 weeks ago. Arizona, the two seed. Sam Houston State, the three. Arizona... Jim, for me, I thought Arizona was going to – they had a chance to host.
They did,
and
yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't host. I thought if anybody was going to host out West, it would have been Zona. I guess finishing tied for third in the Pac-12 hurt them in that regard, which also makes sense. Pac-12 was down this year. Arizona going on the road at Louisiana Lafayette. Arizona has not been too stout on the road. Feels like this is Louisiana Lafayette's regional to win.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, Lafayette always have a great atmosphere there. It's always, you know, they're great at home. And Arizona, I mean, they do have some quality wins. They're 10-6 against the top 50. They obviously won a series at Rice to start the year.
But I think that's their only road series win, if memory serves.
I think,
Pretty...
they swept Cal. So.
Okay, on the road.
So there you go, yep. Well, and they beat Hawaii on the road, right? There you go.
That's the one. And the Pac-12, when I was looking through their series losses, it was swept at Utah, lost 2-3 at UW. Those are really the two series that cost them the Pac-12 title. 1-2 at USC as well, and 1-2 at Oregon.
Yeah, I mean, if they had, if you just look at that, the you know, a couple of those, what, the USC series that they lost, or like the one you said to Oregon. I mean, if they just say win those series, they probably, you know, let's say they tie for the title. They're probably they are hosting. I mean, they have the RPI for it. They're 21. You know, their metrics are all right. But anyway, it is what it is. They're going to Lafayette. That's going to be a tough road trip. Sam Houston finished the season really well. He won the Southland. That's a team that's come on.
Southland. Louisiana Lafayette's the Sun Belt.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's going to be. I think that's going to be a fun tournament.
I think it's also going to be a fun tournament in Oxford, and I think that's a tough regional for Ole Miss, which was borderline national seed, guys. Winds up getting the Pac-12 champion as their fourth seed with Jason Rose, who's a legit ace. That's going to be a tough matchup for Ole Miss in that first game. And then Justin Dunn, another legit ace for Boston College, a three seed against Tulane. I think we're all happy to see Mike Gambino and BC get in. BC, very difficult for them to put a number 35 RPI together when you're in the Northeast. Teddy, what's your take on this regional? I mean, it feels like Ole Miss got a pretty tough draw for not being for just being on the cusp of. If you'd seeded in 10 teams, they would have been in that top 10.
Indeed, the thing about their four is I don't I don't know exactly how you look at Utah from a committee's perspective.
Yeah, how do you treat them?
You know, they are the a Pac-12 champion. And
number 93 RPI now. They've crawled into the top 100.
I mean, but it's still 93, and they're under 500 overall. But, yeah, you're giving them a pretty tough team there. So, that's a tough one to line up when you line up the fours.
It's hard to expect. It's hard to expect Utah to do well in the regional, Jimmer, when they're 6-16 non-conference. 6-16. So and they were 5-16 before winning against BYU in their last non-conference mm-hmm. game of the year. But prior to that, lost to Utah Valley, which did go to regionals. WAC champion Utah Valley. Kudos to Cam Michelio's alma mater. But they won 2 out of 3 at home against UC Riverside. But I mean, the other non-conference for them, you know, St. Mary's, a regional team, but 1-3 against Houston Baptist. Losses to Kansas and Kansas State. Their other losses, Teddy's alma mater, Ball State. I mean, but losses to O-State and Minnesota. I guess all those, hey, most of those games are regional teams.
I mean, the thing about all of those losses is that they're early for the most part. They don't do well in midweeks. So if they do fall into the losers bracket, if Mississippi wins that game, as you would expect they would, it's going to be difficult for the Utes to come out of the losers bracket. If they are able to win that game, they have 3 pretty solid weekend guys, and that's why they've done as well as they've done in the Pac-12. But they're going to have to win that first game, and Ole Miss is going to have to throw Brady Bramlett. They don't have their pitching staff has depth to it, but it's more bullpen depth,
right?
And Mike Bianco knowing how to use a pitching staff than it is, several starting stud kind of guys. So they'll throw their ace, and if they get through that game, they'll set up pretty well. Tulane, could have been into the host mix. You know, we had them as a host a week ago, and then they had a bit of a disappointing AAC tournament in Clearwater, and they wind up as a 2. And it's a tough 2. BC, I still don't know what to make of BC.
Good pitching.
They've got some good pieces. They know how to go on the road. They are not going to be intimidated. So they'll be a tough team. They could make some noise down there, or you know, we'll see.
I'm just going to throw this out for Utah. If Utah had a better regular season, and just projecting into the future, Utah drew 4,400 on Saturday, I believe it was, or Friday, the second game of the tournament, 6,000 in the clincher, 6,000 and change at Salt Lake City at Utah in the AAA Park for the clincher against UW. So Utah's the first men's team to win a Pac-12 championship since Utah joined that league 5 years ago. They're going to get a new ballpark out of this. You watch. They're going to get an on-campus ballpark out of this run. Look in the future. Don't be surprised if Utah becomes and UW. Those are going to be regular factors in the Pac-12. USC, Stanford, these schools let this happen. That this vacuum at the top of the Pac-12. Utah and Washington took advantage of it. Washington got its ballpark. They're capitalizing on it. Every year, the recruiting classes get better and better for UW. It's going to start happening for Utah. They're going to go into NorCal. They're going to get players. And eventually, they're going to be regional to Utah because they're going to draw. I mean, they're going to draw for baseball. They drew 10,000 for the last 2 games there. And if one of these teams in the Pac or one of these teams in the West, if Fullerton drew 3,000 a game, if Arizona drew 4,000 a game, I think that would have been a difference maker in getting a regional. But the passion for college baseball out there in terms of consistent attendance is not what it needs to be to overcome this RPI difference. But if Arizona drew 4,000, 5,000 a game, why would you go to Arizona? Why would you go to Lafayette instead of Arizona? If the resume were maybe one game different. I mean, like Arizona, when it's close, how can you go to the West when they don't draw? You know, it's the NCAA. Do you really think they don't pay attention to the money? Who is altruistic in this universe? Nobody. So why would you expect the baseball tournament to be altruistic and spread the regionals around? I've been reading too many whiny Big 12, Pac-12 West Coast fan tweets. I apologize for my rant. But Utah, I'm just so jacked for Utah because their fans responded, and that's what you want to see. So, and the team responded, 33 runs the last 2 games against UW.
Yeah, that was a blowout on Sunday.
It was blowout city, and the Akron diaspora rears its head. Jason LaPiana. Next year, watch. Zach Mukenhorn is going to the SEC somewhere from North Dakota. He's going to be a factor. We're going to be talking about him at this time next year, being a Friday or Saturday guy in an SEC school come regional time. Baseball America podcast wrapping up. Miami, Stetson, Florida Atlantic, Long Beach State. Jimmer, I think we were all kind of excited to see Long Beach State in as the 3 seed. Mm-hmm. Good sign for the West. FAU, a tough 1-2 in Conference USA. I don't know that it really cost them a 1 seed. Maybe if they won Conference USA, they could have been a 1 seed. Or they weren't going to host.
No.
I don't know where you would have sent them. You know, if they had been a 1 seed, that's an interesting what if. Maybe if FAU wins Conference USA, do they pick a West Coast team to host? I mean, it's an interesting one.
That was a scenario that was in play, I think.
I know Jim and I talked about, you know, can you do that to FAU? Would they actually have said, okay, you're a 1, but here, go all the way across the country
to
Fullerton or to Arizona? Ultimately, it doesn't come into play, but that's still a tough game for Miami. Those two teams played twice during the regular season. They split them. So, you know, if it comes to that, FAU has experience against Miami. They know what they're getting into. And Beach is, that's a good team. Yeah. I expected them to win this weekend against Fullerton, mostly because it was a home series and that they'd already beaten Fullerton at Fullerton. But Fullerton finds a way to pull it out, as the Titans often do.
Yes.
But the Dirtbags are still a tough team. And, they travel. They went to Oklahoma early in the year. They're not a team that just sits around in the West Coast and plays those teams. Fullerton and Beach both get out, and Santa Barbara too. Those Big West teams do a good job at getting out and playing elsewhere, and I think that'll serve the Dirtbags well this week. But I mean, you still look at Miami as one of the national title favorites, and there are good teams here, but Miami, you have to be looking at them as the team to get out.
I was impressed with the Hurricanes this week. Was surprised at the game they lost to Florida State in terms of the way they lost it. They rallied a tie and then couldn't hold them off after tying that game at 4. Thought Miami would be a little bit more offensive than they were. You know, just the down years by Jacob Hayward and Willie Abreu. Really thought both those guys would be around 300. Jacob Hayward's in about 220 right now. Still a factor defensively. Still a factor if you make a mistake. He's got power to punish it. But real exciting lineup. I think FAU is just as good offensively as Miami. They're not as talented, but they've performed as well. So that's going to be a really interesting regional to watch. But I do think Miami has it set up in front of them to go to back to Omaha back-to-back years. When's the last time Miami went back-to-back, Jim Irvin? 1999 and 1998?
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, their last consecutive trips to the College World Series, because I think they went 08, 06. I don't think they went 07.
No.
And before that, it was like 03, 01, something like that. So, but Miami, to me, I also think they're starting to figure out their pitching a bit. Mediavilla is okay, but Lepore, some of the other younger arms starting to figure some things out for Miami. So I'm excited about their pitching as well. Definitely have to see on the other side. We talked a little bit about Texas A&M kind of having a very winnable regional. But, guys, the TCU regional, the Fort Worth regional, last one we should bear down on. Arizona State is a 2. The Zags is a 3. Oral Roberts is a 4. I'm excited about that regional. That's wide open to me. TCU seems like, you just talked to Coach Schlossnagle last night, Teddy. It feels like TCU is the team that's starting to find its identity 60 games in.
Yeah, I mean,
basically what you wrote about. They don't even know what they are yet.
Yeah, he mentioned that going into the week, he told one of his assistants, like, I don't know what this team's idea is, and we're to the end of the season already. But that's what happens with young teams. They're another team that had to replace an awful lot from last year. The core of the teams that went back to back College World Series appearances, those are gone for the most part, and so they it's a different team. He has told me multiple times this season that he feels like their best baseball is in front of them. He told me it again last night. And I've believed him pretty much every time. And I pretty well believe him now, although I think that they might be starting to peak. What we've seen in the last 2 weeks since they lost a series at Baylor is they've played a lot better. They won the Big 12 tournament now. Luke and Baker destroyed
Big boy.
Oklahoma City. He hit 4 home runs in that tournament, and including the one that won the championship game for them. So if he's going hot, and they've got a good offense already, and if he's going to really start hitting for power, he'd only had 4 home runs going into that tournament.
And, unexpected.
Well, Schloss mentioned that, you know, Lucan is a really mature hitter. And, you know, I've talked to him about this before, about the maturity of Lucan at the plate. And he just, it seems like, didn't understand how much power he has and how to use his power. Because he's only 18, this is what happens. But I guess in high school, you know, he connects on pretty much anything and he's strong enough to barrel it out. But in college, that's not necessarily the case. You have to learn how to leverage your power. And I guess it seems like in the last few weeks, he's starting to do that better. And if the ball's flying out for him, it's good stuff for TCU. TCU has had Mitchell Traver back now for a few weeks on the mound, and that's big. And, you know, getting their young pitching staff moving in the right direction has really been key.
Do you feel like they've started to do that? I mean, this was a team that we thought was an 8 for Omaha preseason kind of candidate, and, you know, Baker's on the shelf, right, pitching-wise.
He is not pitching. But they, you know, if Traver is good, you know, they're not going to – this is the odd TCU team in that it's not going to be pitching-based. We've talked about that at times this season.
Yeah.
This is a much more offensive team than we're used to from TCU. They're going to have to hit. They can pitch enough. These teams they're lined up with, they should be able to pitch enough for that. If they do advance and we see them against Texas A&M and Supers, they're gonna face a really, really deep pitching staff in A&M,
right.
And I don't know that TCU can go can match it. So they're gonna have to be able to hit it.
Jim, are any chance of a Sun Devils or Zags or Golden Eagles upset here? You see anybody upsetting the Horned Frogs in that regional?
I mean, I do like Arizona State some, but I think TCU is. I mean, they're just, you know, they're tough to beat at home, especially in the postseason. We saw that last year. I think they're, I would expect them to take care of it. But, I mean, then again, Gonzaga, this is their second trip to Fort Worth.
Yeah,
they
Gonzaga
went down
beat
there.
Them
they,
on
won a, they won a Friday night game there back in March or something like that. ORU is a team that's in regionals pretty much every year, so they're not going to be
it's like a birthright
cowed
for them,
by, every,
basically.
By that. So, I mean, that's not a, it's not an easy regional, but I do think it's, I think TCU is a pretty solid favorite.
What is up with the fact that Gonzaga is back in Fort Worth and East Carolina is back in Charlottesville? I mean, all year when you're doing projections, like I
try to avoid that.
Yeah, I point out the, you know, when you do it, and I know you try to avoid it too. And I mean, why is the committee doing it?
Especially when it's
really
like
laziness?
Something.
Yeah, East Carolina may be understandable.
Yeah, because when it's geographic like that, yeah, when it's geographic, it's one thing. But yeah, when it's kind of totally random, Gonzaga going back to Fort Worth, that's.
Why not East Carolina, I guess, just as the three, say, at Clemson and Nebraska goes to...
Or, I mean, St. Mary's. St. Mary's is in Raleigh. You know, if you're gonna ship three-seeded West teams, you ship to St. Mary's to Raleigh, just ship them to Fort Worth and send Gonzaga to Raleigh.
That makes sense, too. I guess the, you know, yeah, because then you would have...
It's the same conference.
It just makes sense. Yeah, that would work. I don't understand that one either. I'll tell you, Gonzaga, every scout I've talked to, every coach I've talked to loves Brandon Bailey. He's a little guy, but 120 strikeouts, 93 innings. That guy's dangerous. I don't know whether Gonzaga throws him in the opener against Arizona State or goes with Eli Morgan, who's their number two starter, who's been really good. Arizona State guys, I've never lost as much confidence in the team over one game as I have. But everyone's just bashed USC to me all year. All I've heard is USC underperform 31-9 in the final game of the season. That's just unfathomable. I thought that Arizona State had a host possibility if they won this series.
One, yeah.
If they swept, Jimmer, you really could have made a case they would have been tied for the lead or... And it would have been tighter, and all alone in second place in the Pac-12 if they'd swept the series.
Yeah, I think they would have been the favorite to be
the West host.
The host as a two, if FAU, you know, if that had the whole thing had played out. But, yeah, they wouldn't go and lose a home series to SC. I mean, I had Arizona, I mean, that
here's
the
line score
for
SC. 5-7-2-9-2-2. They said 27 runs after six innings. 23-2 was the score after four complete. That is... despicable. I mean, that's just disgusting. 30 hits for USC. I can't believe Arizona State made it to regionals. I mean, I know it's just one game, but I can't believe they went to regionals. And they're a two seed.
Well, you obviously haven't been looking at Tracy Smith's Twitter the last 24 hours.
It's good humor. There's been good humor on there. It's getting retweeted in my timeline. I don't follow Coach Smith, but Mark Gonzalez, friend of the program, Baseball America's longtime Cubs correspondent. He's not anymore. But he retweets Coach ASU Skip, and he's on fire.
I love Tracy. Twitter. Tracy on Twitter is fantastic. I wonder how Tracy's bosses feel about Tracy's Twitter sometimes.
I just had this one. Start inside fastball. Start Martinez game one. Don't focus on winning the regional. Focus on winning one game at a time. Tracy Smith, my advice to you, eat turkey bacon, not regular bacon. I mean, you know. How about this one? I'm not Winkles or Brock who put those five banners on the outfield wall. Wouldn't just say, oh, well, either. What do you do? That's right. You're not Winkles or Brock, nor have you attended one of our practices. Therefore, your opinion does not matter. # combative coach. I mean, he's on fire on the Twitter. I'm not sure that would be my way to handle it.
Tracy is good at the Twitter.
I'll tell you what. A lot of Arizona State fans, you're never going to please them because you're not Brock and you're not Winkles. Pat Murphy always said that to me. Tim Esme found that out because he wasn't Pat Murphy, not to mention Brock or Winkles.
I mean, that's a thing that, I mean, LSU deals with it. Paul Maneri is dealing with it, that he's not Skip. It's just one of these things that you have to deal with. And we talked about Texas at the start of this.
Yeah.
Whoever replaces Augie is going to have to deal with the fact that he is not Augie.
How about this? This is too good. You should have mentioned this. This is the end of the show is now reading Tracy Smith's Twitter. Never in my life would I have thought I'd see an ASU baseball team give up 31 runs in a game. No excuses. Run their butts. I'm correct in that one. You are not much of a psychologist, are you? Responded Coach Smith. This is really embarrassing. Back to him. To underconfident people it is. I guess that's why I'm not embarrassed and you two are dwelling on it. Wow. I mean, that's why you got to think about it.
Tracy is absolutely not underconfident in pretty much anything he does. And that's why we love him. And I mean, he has had this team playing really well for about 2 months now. And this weekend was a blip, but I think that's what it was. I think they'll go and they'll be competitive in this regional. I don't know that they have enough talent at this point to win. They're a bit banged up, and he's just in year two, so he's still working on getting that program truly kicking. But I think they'll go, and I think they'll have a solid showing, a much better showing than what you saw Sunday against USC.
Well, guys, I'm going to make you guys, when we have some actual bandwidth, which apparently because it's a holiday, we don't have bandwidth today like we thought we would. We'll do a Facebook Live. We'll save the picks for the Facebook Live, but I am going to make you guys go on the record and make your picks for the tournament. We won't do that now, but a wide-ranging podcast, which I appreciate. I love doing those on the Memorial Day Monday. It's a tradition unlike any other. We didn't get super angry, Jimmer. There were no loud noises coming from my office on this podcast recording.
No.
As there have been in the past. But really nothing to get too hung up about, right?
Not really, no.
No Schoenert sighs on the 64 team as it was announced, right? I mean, there was nobody who just made you...
No, nothing to... there was nothing egregious.
I didn't think so either. So nice job, committee. Thank you, fans, for all your interest. Thank you guys for the hard work you guys did on your conference tournaments at the SoCon and the SEC. Jim, are you going to ask for SoCon duty again next year? Or you look a little peaked. You look like you've had enough of the SoCon.
I mean, it was fun. Don't.
It's a good ballpark, right?
Floor field is nice.
I prefer a tournament where there's one championship game. But
yes, yeah. That's an advantage.
I think the true double elimination all the way. I'm not on that. Going back to my opinions on conference tournaments, just play the one championship.
But the SEC tournament, Teddy, did it live up to your expectations? Surpass it, perhaps?
Hoover was very good. Those days are long, as promised. But, you know, the talent on the field makes it worth it. And, I mean, there are so many scouts in the stands. I mean, it was very impressive, the talent on the field, and the way that fans showed out. There were two sessions with 13,000 fans for them.
It's amazing.
That was the first time that had happened in tournament history, I believe.
It's kind of like Hoover saying, hey, Nashville or Memphis, come and take it.
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned that on Twitter, that the 13,000 there for the second time, and somebody asked, could Memphis do that? And physically, they can't. The Memphis ballpark seats 10,000 people. So unless they can put extra seats there, you can't get 13,000 people into Memphis. I'm pretty sure you can't get 13,000 in Nashville either. That's just one of the things the committee in the SEC is looking at while they're selecting a host. But that is something that they're going to have to think about, is that Hoover showed up this year. They really, really did. Their fans did a great job, and it was a great atmosphere in Hoover for the whole week.
Indeed. And one last rush and a push for us at the end of the season. BA 500, looking to put that up on Thursday. I'm not sure all the reports will be up, but the list will be up on Thursday. And obviously college regional previews, brackets, et cetera, at baseballamerica.com. So thanks for the download. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Jimmer, Mike, who had to peace out early, and Teddy. We'll see you on the next BA podcast. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit baseballamerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.